Hey all, and welcome to the Late Mail Crew Season 2023 debrief, if you can call it that, the overview, what we've learnt, what we haven't maybe, and maybe looking at a few things we're going to be thinking about, preparing and strategising towards when we start looking into the 2024 season. Joined as always, I am joined by Paulie G. How you doing, Paulie?
Good, mate. I'm telling you, I've had a bit of time since the season's ended to just reflect on what we learned, and yeah, I'm excited to chat about it.
Yeah, well, look, it was certainly a different season. We had the buys, we had a lot of different change-ups in how teams are playing, maybe because of the buys, the longer season, and also just the changes within fantasy itself. We had the first year where we had belated trades given from round 20, so it'll be interesting to see what and how they do next year. We're also going to be joined by Roscoe. He will be here eventually, maybe. Also Timmy, maybe. So we'll see if they come in throughout tonight. But first of all, mate, how did you find 2023? And probably best question is when did you start planning for 2024?
Yeah, good. A lot to learn. I feel like it was a real learning year, and I just think that as of everybody, myself included, probably itchy trigger fingers. I think we got too excited on, oh, he's a must train out. Oh, you've got to make that move. And yeah, just went too far down that way. And I think next year players will be a little bit more conservative. And we saw in the last round the massive upheaval, and you had people that were like Nigel coming first the whole way and ended up not coming first. So I think, you know, like it's definitely the tortoise v the hare when it comes to this style of fantasy where so much unknown. You gotta keep your trades, and you gotta really, really plan to have guys that are going to be playing in those final rounds. You can't avoid injuries and suspensions, but you can avoid teams that are either going to be well gone or well in front where they're going to start resting players.
I think the key takeout is just how high the ownership was for Hopgood, for example. We all knew he wasn't going to play, but he was still one of the highest owned players at that time. So,
I think the lessons learned from him, right? Like the whole year round, people got rid of him too soon when they brought him. Well, they didn't know the timing when to bring him back. And then, like you said, and then stuck with him, obviously, for round 27 as a non-player. But, yeah, he wasn't the only one. I mean, I think I had
Jack Bird. Jack Bird was in and out. Manu, because of
Brandon Smith
looking after that. Yes, absolutely. All four of those came out and in my side at least twice. And before now, I'd never had a player ever go out and come back in.
And just that wider fantasy community, like, there was a big push. It wasn't just coming from one side. Like, it was pretty much anywhere you turn, anywhere you look, any advice you wanted to get. And it all said, no, you got to get rid of this guy, you got to get rid of that guy. And I think next year there'll be some dissenters. I still think you'll get that aspect where people will just be like, no, you got to go hard or go home. But I think you'll hear some dissenting voices out there in the wider fantasy community to say, oh, maybe that strategy doesn't work for to get you all the way to round 27.
And that's the main thing too. And we'll start going through some strategies and some ideas and thoughts we have on our next year. But I think consistency is key. And I think that's where the Prestons and the Hopgoods really stood out this year. Was they were obviously they started quite cheap, so a lot of people had them in their side, but they also maintained where they were at for the period of time.
What your expectations are. So I think Luke's great at this. Like, he'll say, "You got your 40. What are you complaining about?" So you get a 40, and that's still like a decent score. You know, if they're averaging in 50s and they have a game where they only get 40, like, that's still good. Like, you don't need to oh, he didn't get 50 this time, I've got to get rid of him.
And that was definitely where we found there were some players, especially in the centre roles and winger fullbacks this year, where there were players that were hitting semi-consistent 50s, and when you've got one that doesn't, you almost feel like, okay, I need to get that one in, and that that's where the merry-go-round started, especially for me. Those two positions, I stuck with those positions, and I think I burnt probably two-thirds of my trades on those two positions alone. And they're, after this year, the most obsolete, like in terms of points overall, they're just not worth, that's not worth your trades, that's not worth your money.
Yeah, you got to be really astute when you're going to make a trade of a center, for example. Not, you don't really want to be making them and then making them and then making them.
And I think that's where that consistency comes in. It's almost worth getting a player who's going to get you a 30 every week in a center spot that barely costs you anything, because in the grand scheme of things, players are priced at their price point. 30 for a center is good.
Looking at a guy with a decent base.
Absolutely. And if you can keep that consistency and you're not having to bounce in and out every week for that player, it's worth it from the trades you saved from doing that, rather than the really high-profile players, for example. We mentioned them before, Manu and Bird. They were in and out, and they eventually cost us at least, for me personally, I think I spent at least four or five trades on those players, either to get to them or to swap them out to somebody else to then come back again, because they were consistently good for a period of time, but then they both went through that injury period and
a lot of trades to lose when at the back end you're trying to really cultivate that the ultimate team, you know, and suddenly you're looking and going, oh, I've only got this many trades, but if I hadn't have burnt so many on different centres, it would have been
absolutely fun. Absolutely.
Ross, looks like Ross goes here.
Welcome, Ross. How are we doing?
Yeah, good, boys. I'm just, I missed your voices, so I'm just sitting here just listening. So, what are we up to, lads? What's on the agenda?
So, just going over a few things that we, I guess, takeaways throughout the year. We're doing a couple of things. One, takeaways from what we learned through the year with the longer season, with the bye rounds involved as well, having the 17 teams in. And also the impacts to fantasy as well, having those later trades coming in, and perhaps some thoughts about perhaps your strategies and what you might be focusing on when you select your side for 24.
Okay, I don't know what you've spoken about previously, but I would say my biggest takeaway was worried about round 13. Rather than the previous 12 rounds. So my big mistake was having, I think it started with Turbo, and then there was just, it was key players in bye rounds early on, and it just zapped me of so many points. And I think the biggest takeaway for me would be next year I'm going to play the bye rounds quite strong prior to the first major bye, and I'm probably going to have minimal players that are missing out, regardless of what their name or history is. I think that's the strongest way to go, and then go hard from round 13 onwards.
Interesting, wasn't it, when we looked at the I broke down sort of how to look at the scores. So round 13 to 20, obviously, when we know this, but not many of the big names were there, like, because they were all playing Origin. So you had guys like this when Asako really had his big run, you know.
Right.
And a lot of players that we wouldn't maybe have thought of as to be fantasy relevant when the season started, you know, Drinkwater, like they topped the pops for that 8 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And like there's sliding doors moments, because you still need to bloody make cash, right? But at the same time, you don't want to be burning through so many trades. So positions, obviously your halfbacks and hookers and front rowers, it's going to be pretty hard to miss out on some really top-tier players. But what we learned this year, if they're missing for 1 week, it's such a big hit to your score. So,
and when you got a turbo, like an outside back who – his up and down scores anyway, they could miss a week, then they could come back and only get a 25.
Yeah, true. Like,
there's a lot of variables there, or at least if you've got a pain ass, you know, well, when he comes back in, he should get me a solid 60. But there were so many players where you couldn't rely on those scores week to week, even though average wise they did well.
That's a good point, Paulie. Floggy. I was just going to say that's a good point with you brought up about like a fullback versus a Payne Haas. That's a full flip from the previous year, right? Like fullbacks were so reliable for so long, and their ceiling for it was just astronomical, the points that they could rack up. And sure, they did it every bloody week. Like there's always one fullback going off, but you couldn't pick it. Whereas the front rowers are just so reliable these days. So it's sort of just, it's going around in these little cycles. So yeah, it's sort losing of going that back point. To the early tens and mid teens.
Losing that teens. Point for tackle busts really hurt fullbacks.
Yeah, like that's right.
Yeah.
Turbo.
And not only that, too, years gone by, especially fullbacks, there was a fairly significant gap between the higher tier players and then the rest. Yeah. So you spend more, especially at the start of the season, to get those high tier players expecting things to continue on. And they just didn't fire. I know yourself, Paulie, and me were sitting holding Teddy, ended up holding him nearly all the way through.
Yeah, he came good eventually, but the people like Ross
absolutely
saved a lot of money by bringing him in at the right time.
And it was after Origin when he actually started earning his keep. But by then he'd already lost 200 and I think it was close to 300,000 in
literally every single year for like the past 3 years, he's dropped down to mid 500. So you know, you're either playing the points and you sacrifice the money. You're hoping that he jags a few 60s and 70s in that before he starts going up in his scores, or you just don't get him.
Yeah.
The prime example was like Hammer this year, right? Like I didn't get him and a lot of people did, but I sort of antipodded and it failed miserably, but he was just busting out these 45s, 50s, it's just like consistent. Scott Drinkwater, like all these players that were sort of, they're on the precipice of being like really good fantasy every now and then, but they're just so solid this year. So
every fullback had once they hit that right price, so Drinkwater went down in cost. So originally he's too expensive. He comes down. I know Scotty and I had been chatting about how if Scott Drinkwater just comes down a little bit more, I think he's a buy. And then we both bought him, I think, the same round. And, after that, he went bananas. No one could have seen him going bananas. But it was always, it seems like Ponga, you know, he had that price. Once he bottomed, it was like, now get on because he'll come good. But everyone's got their price. Hammer was the perfect price to start with. Sloan was a good price to start with. Reece Walsh was good to start with.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you reckon about next year? Who are we liking? Well before preseason, so this is so like
I feel the same as Bloggy, but I'll let him take the ball here. The Penrith lock.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, every single year from his rookie year onwards, he's always been up the top. We all had him in the rookie year because he was cheap as chips to start with. But since then, he's just consistently been in the top 5 to 7 in fantasy and no one gets him. I mean, in a year when players went in and out, I think, you just bite the bullet and get him because you're paying for what you get. But outside of Origin, he played. That was it. He played and played well. All the way through.
Less than that too, because I know on game days we chat while we're watching the game, and every time it's Penrith, right? Like we say, oh, bloody hell, I wish I frigging got Yo. And it's like, this is like maybe round 6 or 7, come round like 15, 6, oh, I wish I had him. Come in like round 23, oh, bloody hell, I wish I'm going to get him next year. And you don't do it. And I'm like, oh. You sort of start sacrificing these solid players for mid-range that you hope going to be a cash year and it fails, and you're like, oh, I should have just started with him.
You know what it is, Ross, is that once the season's going, you're always looking for the bargain. So you're always looking for the guy, like Payne Haas might drop a bit because he might get suspended or he might do something, you know, where Kevy takes him off for half a game. And suddenly you think, geez, if I buy Payne Haas now, I'm going to get him at a discount. Isaiah never changes. So you never get him at a discount.
That's why he's never in the chat. That's why he's never in the discussions, is because he's never at a buyable price.
That's why you have to start with him.
It eliminates the need to try and work out how to get a bloke in, because how many of those do we have to have through the year?
There's just not enough trades to bring in an Isaiah Yeo. You wanted to start with him, and the guys you want to bring in are your feeders and guys like that who will buy them through the year.
And they have a few rounds off the bench because of long seasons. Origin periods.
That's my window. I'll go get him.
It's like you hit the nail on the head. It's like I don't know if we can edit this out, but it's sort of like no risk gambling, right? Like everyone just wants to hit the jackpot on their cash cows, and you sort of. The smart guys have sort of, they've got the balance right where they've got their staples, their blue chips, but also they've calculated their cash cows. Whereas I think a lot of people sit in the territory of bulk cash cows, and it's either going to work, and it does work for some of those people at the top of the rankings. Like you look at some of those teams, they just jagged all the right players, but for the best part, yeah, it's
most
it's,
of the top players had Yeo.
Yeah, there well, you when, go.
Well, yeah. When you're starting your season, I mean, it differs, because especially early on, you want cash generation. You want to be able to get those guys. You want to be able to get the hot goods, the Hoskins, at the right time early on. Like SJ last year, amazing. Getting those guys at the right time, the right price. That's what you got to do through the season. So I guess. For me, Isaiah Yeo is the guy that you either bring in at the start of the year, or he's like one of the last players you bring in to bring you home, because he's like you said, he's not going to come down in price, he's not going to vary in any way. And whilst you're working up to get a bloke like that, you're missing out on the informed guys that have now popped off, and those trades are being used on a bloke who is solid all the way through. But then you've missed the bloke that's on the up and up.
That's right. So if everyone else is getting a Fifita and you go, oh, no, I'll get Isaiah Yeo, and then two weeks later Fifita is two monsters, and you're like, you have to go get Fifita, but you've got to pay another 100K. Like, you've just given up 100K to your opponents. You can't do it. The week when that window's there, you just got to go and get those guys. So that's why Yeo is smart just to own from the start, because it's just one extra guy you're going to own. Yeah, unless touch wood, unless he gets injured, like, he's just going to be a staple. You're never going to want to trade him out. He's going to be someone there. Whereas anyone else you start with, Haas, Tedesco, we just talked about, you know, even Cleary and Hines Cleary got injured, you know, where obviously you want to have Cleary no matter what. But Yo's the only one where he's just missed a consistent.
And as like years gone by as well, there was a period where him and James Fisher-Harris were interchanging. We didn't see any of that last year. He was there the whole time. And I think that was key, considering how long the season was, the impact of the year. And he did it all. He was involved in all the rep games, everything, and he still made the club games, and he still had the minutes. There was never really a period apart from near the end, I think. There was a few lower minute games he had.
But by then,
the season's wrapped up. By then, the people who have had him were all the way through. They're sitting still in the top ranks.
You could play it round 27, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you guys are going to buy Yeo, and I think halves are going to cost them bomb no matter who you go with. Right. So where do you save? Where do you save money in your
position? That's my next segue. So you were just talking about minutes. How many 80-minute hookers are there anymore?
I know, right? Yeah. Like, how do you pick a hooker?
So I have my, I know the guy that I'm going to have straight away is Big Gordy from Melbourne, Manly. So,
and you think you'll get the
no brainer? Like you can get Harry Grant or whatever after, but I just know that he's going to get you a solid 40 something points, and you make up elsewhere.
Because Harry Grant definitely can score good points even with lower minutes, but I don't think any other hooker can, eh?
Well, I mean, he even had a dip at near the end of the season too, where he was getting 40s. So, I mean, owning the top hooker at the time, it was almost like they were interchanging between him, Cook, and who else was up there?
Yeah, well, there wasn't a lot of guys up there.
There wasn't.
Tanner Boyd was a halfback that you could play at hooker, and he had a good year. Reece Robson started well, but he kind of took a bit. Reed Marnie had some Marshall big King. Games. Marshall King had some big out of the games. Blue. They also had some shockers.
Yep. Marshall King, yeah.
You know, and then you had the injuries. And Wade Egan looked good at times. He was always getting hurt, though, with concussions.
So I think that's definitely an area that's where I'll be saving money. It's easy for me to say it now, but I'm pretty sure that's what everyone will be doing as well.
Yeah.
And in fullbacks as well, like everyone skimps over fullbacks.
So you've got Stephen Crichton, for example, that'll be coming in at quite a heavy discount, who is ushered to get that spot. Is that making a high-owned player starting round one?
I'm wondering with the Raiders. The Raiders have got some young guys there they're talking about.
It's got a heap of spots up for grabs there.
Yeah.
I know you boys touched on it, and, mate, it gives me the absolute shits every year of how many bloody trades we use over centres, but you just got to get some luck without some injuries, because it's the most injured bloody player on the field is centres these days. It's just crazy. So you always got to start with one gun, I feel.
I like the idea of the base that Floggy was talking about, so whether it's Val Holmes because he kicks goals or whoever it is that you're going with. But I just like that idea that someone, like if Jacob Kiraz is listed as a centre to start the year, because you know how much work he does, even if, you know, like with his hit-ups, like it just gives you that base that you can go, well, even if he has a bad game, we'll get a 20-something. Because some of these centres were scoring like 6 or 8 or,
you know, terrible.
Those cheaper ones at the start of the year.
And that's when you panic and that's when you trade. That's the problem.
You can't cop an 8, you know, and everyone else is getting 40s at that stage of the year. You know, it's still early.
Like Lomax, for example, he had a fairly low scoring season where usually he's a bit higher than where he was. Well, he's going
to be interesting because you've got the whole Flanagan effect. Is that going to unlock Lomax? And if he's cheaper because of what happened last year, like that could really, he could really be a bargain.
I'd bloody love to see him at fullback. A goal-kicking fullback. It would be so good.
Imagine if he's still listed in the centres and he does that.
Well, another one who's coming in as well, who started there in his rookie year, Bronson Cherry's back.
Mm-hmm.
So does he start with that position still, or will it come down to...
He'll be in the outside backs because he's been working with Roger.
He's a lot bigger.
He is bigger, but I think he's still got some... He's still pretty darn quick from what I've seen. So
Jake, I think he'll be real over the Dolphins.
Yeah, that's true, bro. He should get the number one jersey, you'd think.
Herbie's also going there.
Mm.
Some interesting, there's going to be some interesting centre options. There's going to be some fluctuations in people's teams around the centres, I reckon.
And that's good. Like, it's not going to be boring. But, yeah, it's always the one position that always separates the boys from the men. If you get the right combo early, you skyrocket up the ranks because everyone else has the same other 15 or so players.
Yeah.
Roughly, but it's always the centre comparing. It's very interesting.
What about strategy around, because I know TK was big on just have one or two players from each club because when they have their bye, like you're going to be missing. What do you reckon strategy around that? Is that maybe just smart for teams that have a bye in the first 10 rounds, but not really?
I think it works then. Yeah, I think it works for the first 11 rounds, because that was that was what I was going to bring up before, is that in rounds 12 through to 20, most teams have at least two buys in that period.
Yeah.
So, like that's when – that's the moments where you just bite the bullet, because players are missing, the big players are missing as well. So you missing out on a player because they got a buy isn't the worst thing in the world, because they're the rounds where the origin players aren't playing as well. Generally, they're the higher fantasy scoring players.
Might be a round where there's only 13 anyway that you need.
Right, exactly. So you might only need to score to have, you know, 14, 15 scorers that week, just because the average points for those rounds. I mean, how many rounds did we see where the top average players were scoring 1100s, for example, and then the next week it was like 800, 900.
It's a massive fluctuation,
and especially during that period, I think that's where the panic button comes in, and people panic trade in those periods, or they hold their trades knowing that that's the time I'm going to use them. But at the same time, you're doing a trade, and it might only come off that you score a 40 because the team's disjointed because the key players are missing. So what's the trade for?
I'm going to agree with Paulie on this one, and TK. I'm going to say, that was a massive downfall for me in the first 12 rounds, having more than two. But the upside is the cash gen. Like, you don't want to miss out on a really good cashy just because he's like, if he was never going to play in your team anyway, what's the issue?
Yeah, maybe first six rounds, you just got to keep an eye on who's got.
But if it's an emergency player, what's the issue? Like, if you're never going to play them.
Yeah, I think the first six, you want to keep it to two.
Yeah. But
anyone else, I think you can be a bit more liberal.
Agree. And I guess from that first 12 rounds, you do have to look and sort of set yourself up for 13, because it is a pretty massive point scoring opportunity, right?
It's usually the best way to break down those 50-50 trade calls.
Yeah. Otherwise,
you know, when you've got a player and you're looking at trading one in, and then somebody else comes up, which one do I go? When's the next buy? And are they playing that 13?
Origin. Yeah. Are they playing Origin? When's the next buy? Yeah,
I think so. And do you reckon if whoever ends up having a round one buy, do you reckon just get two of their players? Because they can send in your emergencies in round one.
And it's not like you're not going to have 17 to start the round.
That's right. So there's one round where you know you're going to have 17. It's round one, so you may as well carry a couple of buy
players. It's the annoying edge sort of utility roles that, he's getting talked up to get some big minutes off the bench. Is he going to get named? And then if he doesn't, you get shafted. And then you've got this dud that's not playing on your bench. It's like, oh, mate.
Yeah, that's true as well. And the lack of cash gen, if you've got two players that aren't playing in round one, neither of them make money.
Well, instead of a cash generator, are you even looking at bringing in a gun for that round one buy side instead? Because they're not there for.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? They're not. That means that now their team's only got three buys now.
That's right.
It's over. Yeah, they've already used one of their three.
And you know they're going to get picked because that's their job. Like, that's when you get the Haas or the Yo, or depending on whoever's got that first round bye. Well, we know four teams that aren't going to have the byes, because obviously they've been selected for Vegas.
Because that other thing with Vegas as well, it's going to be a long week. So utilising that, and maybe, I've put in a couple of guys in my emergencies, but they've done well, so now I will pick a guy with a bye. Like, I'll flip it. Whereas if they go so well, then you go, no, I'm going to need all hands on deck.
It's definitely going to be a different round, that first round, and very interesting to see how that eventuates and what ends up happening with it. But yeah, it's going to be a tricky, especially when generally you're kind of, you've got your team locked in maybe for a couple of decisions, but if they draw out the round, it's almost torture for that first round. That
just getting way to breath thinking about it. Bloody footy. Gosh, I miss it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've got the Pacific Games. So they're all happening now, the Pacific Championships. But
Did you get anything out of this last month and also the final series that you can take into fantasy next year?
Mate, like I said, my number nine, Gordon Kumchong. Like
he had an unreal game. Bloody amazing.
He's just been braining it. He's such a good player.
And the fullback from, was it Tonga?
Yeah, Faiolongo.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He's earned a spot somewhere.
Yeah. I think so. I think Faiolongo plays. I think you've got to put him straight into your fantasy team if he gets named in round one, because who knows when Pappenhausen's playing again.
Yeah, like the whole Australian team's just been a bit boring. Like it's so predictable, but it's all the like the tier two nations that giving everyone a little go out of position sort of thing. Like you got Stephen Crichton playing at 5'8".
Masters halfback.
It's not bad. Yeah, it's... Hope you get some time there or somewhere during the year. Get a bit of DPP going.
Yeah,
absolutely. Need a few more Ponga trials at half as well. Get a few people setting the odds in the wrong way and then bring it home at the end when they decide that's a horrible idea.
Yeah. Oh, all right. We should try and do another one after the draw's done, maybe. In December or something,
because then we can actually look at those options and rather than, I guess, hypothetically looking at things, look at those must have players within the teams when we're starting to get closer to the first bye round, who to avoid in that time, and I think that's going to be a good idea once that drops.
And Paulie, have you got much content coming out on NRL?
We're gonna be planning once this draw gets announced to do some stuff, and then we'll have the main stuff on, and then go straight to some fantasy and analysis with Luke.
Good time.
So hopefully we don't know that we haven't been told the exact dates everything's coming out, but it's supposed to be not long after the Pac Champs are kind of wound up. Hopefully. So
it's gonna be just pre-recorded.
I think we're trying to do it all live.
Amazing. Love that.
Yeah.
A lot of my week.
Yeah. Doing it live.
Amazing. All right, good lads. Stuff, guys. We'll chat soon, eh?
Absolutely. Good. Thanks for joining us, boys. We'll be back in a little bit longer once the draw drops, and we'll start discussing a few more things and get a little bit more strategic towards the 2024 season. Thanks, boys, for coming along, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks. Cheers, Matt.
Bye.
Evening.
Shall we switch to clubhouse once Luke?
Yeah.
This is all good.
Yeah, you fucking mutt.
I'll send him a message.
Okay.
Timmy doesn't do that.
Do you want to set up a room now?
I'll do it.
I can't. I have PTSD from the many times trying to set up a bloody room in Clubhouse.
You have to set up like a
You got to set up a Clubhouse or something.
I
still don't know how it does. Every single time, it just goes to a message or a voice.
Oh, I set it up. I was like, and it was like a fucking story or some shit. Yeah,
and then we just carried on with it. I'll send you a message.
Voice mails to each other.
Yeah. I'll send him a message. He's Baldwin. Someone messaging Baldwin to say we're going on.
Yeah, I just did.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, just got to, like you said, figure out how to do it.
What the hell?
Here we go.
I just feel like they made it a heap harder to use. Like, it wasn't that difficult to use before. You made it worse.
Yeah. It's so weird why they